This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we're answering listener questions. And before we get to listener questions, I wanted to tell you about a recent podcast that we posted it recently. It's a little bit of a digression from the usual theme of intelligent medicine, because we talk about nutrients and supplements, and we talk about maybe exercise, maybe things along the lines of yoga, acupuncture, holistic things. Mm-hmm. This was about a medication, but a medication that's used in an ingenious fashion to treat refractory depression, even suicidal depression. And the medication is a local anesthetic. It's systemic anesthetic. It's used to put people under. It's called ketamine.
Oh!
Ketamine.
Isn't that the date rape drug?
Well, it
Special
is.
Special K?
Yes, Special K, yes.
Sorry.
And it's got, no, you're right. you're right. It's not a narcotic. It is a dissociative drug. It's kind of knocks you out. And yes, it's been used nefariously, and it's used by people to get high. But when used properly, in the right setting, it has tremendous potential for to treat very, very profound depression, pain syndromes. There's some research on it for MS. Mm-hmm. It seems to enhance brain-derived neurotrophic factor, helping with brain repair. It was originally discovered when returning GI suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder underwent surgery. They received ketamine, and they obtained relief from their PTSD symptoms. Wow. And so it's been now introduced as a way of treating depression. I talked to the medical director and founder of the Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles, Dr. Stephen Mandel. And it's a very interesting podcast because it's an innovative deployment, an off-label deployment of what's normally used for surgery.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Very cool.
Wow.
Of interest to me, mm-hmm. one condition that is really a very, very difficult condition to treat is something called chronic regional pain syndrome, CRPS, formerly mm-hmm. referred to as reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It's a devilish syndrome of chronic pain, usually in one limb where maybe there's been surgery or an injury, and it is really tough to treat.
Wow.
And it's thought that somehow when you take this medication, I analogize this with the doctor, and he said, I agree with you entirely. He said, it's a little bit like, you know, when my computer doesn't work or slows down, it's time for a reboot. Mm. You know, I just hit restart or do a hard reboot.
It's like recalibrating.
Yeah, and it all comes back together. Mm. And that's a little bit when you have these aberrant nerve impulses in depression or in pain. You can do a system reboot with the medication that kind of scrambles your nerve signals for a while.
Yeah.
And then they kind of realign in a proper way.
I'm thinking of one patient, I won't mention his name, obviously, in particular, with a pain in his shin since he had a recent surgery.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So many off-label uses, low-dose
naltrexone is another one that comes to mind, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or even off-label use, if it's called an off-label use of antidepressants, I was just reading about it, for insomnia and for migraine,
sure.
Antidepressants.
Well, what happens is when you use a very low dose of some old-fashioned antidepressants, it's particularly effective for insomnia, non-addictive. It's not like some of these benzo medications that are more addictive.
Okay. Fascinating.
Yep.
All right. So, we've got an email from Tom. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Love your show. Thank you for listening, Tom. Can you comment on Sambucus elderberry immune syrup for use for colds and viral infections. Is it effective? Yes. Elderberry yep. syrup mm-hmm. is known, and I'm actually looking at an abstract of a study from back in 2001. It's standardized black elderberry extract, and it's natural remedy with antiviral properties against different strains of flu virus. Actually, Sambucol was shown to be effective in vitro, meaning in the lab, not in our bodies necessarily, against 10 strains of influenza virus. So this is interesting. And how it changes the production of human cytokines, part of our immune system, the inflammatory cytokines, mm-hmm. and so forth. So it's Sambucol is therefore beneficial to the immune system activation and in the inflammatory process and in people with various diseases. So it can have an immunoprotective or an immunostimulatory effect.
Which
when
is
administered.
Useful.
Yeah.
Useful. Yeah, like
very, very useful.
In the sense that mm-hmm. echinacea also may work.
Right,
similar.
Right.
Much of this research comes from Israel, I think.
I think so. This is from European Cytokine Network.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is interesting. But this is just one of many that I was reading about. So definitely elderberry. Now, this is not elderberry wine. This mm-hmm. is elderberry immune syrup, or, you know, in Sambucol is a brand.
This prompts another digression because they did a recent study on vitamin D in upper respiratory infections and in the flu, you know, not distinguishing between rhinovirus and influenza. And what they found was that there was definitely a benefit. They looked at, I think, 40 studies that were good quality studies, and they found that the advantage went to vitamin D. Mm. Now, the flu shot is this year, they think it's a resounding success. It's 48% effective, so they say, which isn't that...
That's a resounding success?
Well, some years it's 20% effective or 30% effective. It all depends on whether they get the prediction right of the type of flu that's going to come around in a few months. It's sort of like long-term weather forecasting,
right.
you know,
yeah.
where it's very hard, you know, what are we going to have a very hot summer, or, you know, who knows? I mean, uh-huh. it's months ahead. So what they did is something very interesting. They did a comparison where they looked at number needed to treat, NNT, which is a concept of statistics, where it means how many people do you have to treat for one person to achieve benefit? Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised, some of the medications that we use have an NNT that's relatively high, like statins may have an NNT of, you know, at best, 60 or 100
yeah.
for protection. But hey, the guy who's saved or the gal who's saved is pretty happy that they're saved.
Sure.
So they figure it's worthwhile that people get treated unnecessarily or that it doesn't help certain people. It helps one out of 60. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So number needed to treat, according to some studies for vitamin D and prevention of colds and flus, is about 33. Number needed to treat with the flu shot is 40. So it actually, vitamin D, you number
wow,
needed to treat is better.
Better.
But
uh-huh.
in the case where people actually are deficient in uh-huh. vitamin D, and I think their cutoff was 15, which is pretty low, but we do occasionally see patients who are abysmally low vitamin D.
16.
Yeah, you know.
Eight.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Single digit, you know.
Yeah.
My mother was single digit when I checked her. You know, nobody wanted to do the test. I finally said, I'll pay for it. And I did the test, and her vitamin D was 7, you know.
Wow.
She'd just broken her leg. And, of course, her, you know, she was osteoporotic. Mm. But anyway, what they found is the number needed to treat was about 16, which is pretty darn good. Any medication that offers that degree of protection is vastly superior to the flu shot. But, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, so, you know, you could take the flu shot and vitamin D and you might achieve an even greater degree of protection.
Right, right.
That you know, helps. Notwithstanding concerns about side effects or, you know, mercury in the vaccines or aluminum in the vaccines,
right,
which is another issue.
The, yeah. Right. So, and if you get the flu, you could take some Sambucol. You could take ester C and zinc.
Take
you
could more
take D. Viracid. You could take D. You could take...
I actually have a protocol AHCC? Where I suggest that unless people have very high levels of D to begin with, you can safely take vitamin D 50,000 three consecutive days. No more.
Yes, no more. 50,000.
But
and if you're 12, 40,000. If you're a child, an adolescent, 40,000.
Oh.
I believe was the, for adults, 50,000.
Okay.
Unless you do something different.
No, yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, a caution in a really small child, you know,
yeah.
a physical body that's half the size yeah. of an adult.
Right. But it's very, very helpful. Back in my days at the Atkins Center, I remember somebody there saying, if you're not afraid to ward off a cold, rather than using vitamin D, or before vitamin D was really known, taking very, very high amounts of vitamin A.
A, right, right.
For like 2 or 3, oh, like 100,000.
Well,
a lot. I mean, not 10,000, a lot.
No, I guess you could do that, but
I'd be afraid of
it. I think the data on vitamin A is a little less robust than the data on vitamin D. Plus, the toxicity is more profound with vitamin A.
Yeah.
Because vitamin D you can become toxic with, but vitamin A, it's more likely you'll become toxic sooner. So that's why I'm not a fan of cod liver oil, which combines A
right.
and D and,
right.
and omega-3s, and you take a lot of it, you're mm-hmm. going to get some omega-3, but probably decent amounts of D, but maybe too much A.
Too much A, exactly, exactly. But when you do have cold and flu, Virucid, I love that product, mm-hmm. Virucid, and you're getting approximately, at the full dose you're taking, you're getting about 10,000 IU
yeah.
of vitamin A, which is just fine for the duration
right. you know, what they do
of a cold or flu.
What they do in you know, as part of international health programs in Africa and places like Nepal, is health workers go around to villages that are isolated where people may have marginal nutrition. And it's known that they have vitamin A deficiency
yes.
because they develop an eye disease that's associated with vitamin A deficiency. I forget mm-hmm. what it's called. It's rare or, you mm-hmm. know, virtually never happens in the United States. But it happens in third world countries. And what they do is they will administer enormously high doses of vitamin A, but once every 3 months.
Yeah.
And it can be done safely because it's a time release kind of thing. And, you know, you can take, I don't even know what they give, like a million or something like that,
wow.
really high doses.
Uh-huh.
And then what they've done is they've dramatically reduced the incidence of measles deaths from viral illnesses in those children, because those kids who are malnourished, they get the measles and they're gone. And plus,
yeah.
genetically, they're not as, they don't have as much historical experience with mm-hmm. the measles virus. And that's one of the reasons why we virtually wiped out the Native American population of North America and South America, is through exposure to ordinary viruses that Europeans brought with them.
Wow. Wow. So vitamin A, potent immune help.
Yeah, that can help too.
Oh, gosh. Tom, thank you for your question on Sambucol. Oh, this is very interesting. Sylvia writes, I suffer from vertigo. I was told to take an antihistamine daily. Are there any contraindications to taking antihistamines long-term? Can you suggest any other treatment or supplements for my vertigo? I have a story.
Cool.
This was in the mid to late 90s. I had vertigo, and it was bad. And I went to my primary care physician, and she checked me, and she had me move my head and do certain things. And she said, oh, it's on your right side. Okay, whatever. Here's a script for Deconamine, an antihistamine.
Oh,
Deconamine,
that's
which contains caffeine.
One. Okay.
And she said, keep taking it as long as you feel this way. Well, I did and I did and I did, and it got worse, because caffeine will make vertigo worse.
Yeah.
I wind up at Dr. Kimmelman's office, who was actually the mentor, he's an ENT, who was actually the mentor of my own ENT, who
okay.
was out of town.
Oh.
This is over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I went to see him, and he said, first of all, stop taking Deconamine. Stop having anything caffeinated, so forth and so on. Had me do some exercises and said, oh, the vertigo's on your left side. Interesting thing, after taking the Deconamine, I developed a tinnitus here that's never let up.
Oh, okay.
Well, it could be from the vertigo.
Right.
Which was determined that it was a viral thing, because
yeah.
I was basically motion sick for 3 months.
That's the way it works. Is people have what's called paroxysmal vertigo, which is an attack of vertigo, and that's usually the result of a viral insult to the tiny hair cells that line the ear canals that are the source of balance and equilibrium.
I think my point here was also, don't just go to your primary care when you should be going to a
right.
specialist who told me the exact opposite of what she had told me to do.
So apropos of you know, the question, which is the antihistamines. Antihistamines can provide some relief.
By draining your sinuses.
But there may also be some basis for believing there's a histamine response in the inner ear that causes this. What I found, and again, these are anecdotes, but I also substantiate that when working with patients, is when I changed my diet, got away from dairy and wheat, which I'm allergic to, for a while I had kind of, it wasn't like room spinning vertigo, but it was like a sense of unease
Being
on a boat, or, you know, I'd have to focus on the horizon. Being in a car as a driver, I was fine. Focusing on the road ahead, I was fine. But I could not be a passenger. I couldn't be on a train and read. I found it very upsetting and disconcerting to read. Now I can read away in a plane, a train. It's no problem. You know, and I thought, oh my God, this is, you know, it's happened in my 40s. And I thought, this is just going to be the way it is. It's going to get worse and worse because these conditions are progressive. It got better as I refined my diet, which is another antihistaminic measure, because if you get rid of the things that trigger allergies, you're going to reduce your symptoms. So I think allergies have a lot to do with vertigo sometimes. Using an antihistamine on the one hand is a quick fix, but paying attention to your diet and possible allergens is another one, you know.
And some people will be prone to vertigo even during hay fever season, spring, fall. Some people have it in summer. Sometimes it's related to sinus congestion, other times not. I know that if I have a bad cold and I have a lot of nasal congestion, it might trigger me to be a little bit dizzy. But, you know, your brain compensates after a while. Sylvia, so if you're taking an antihistamine,
Long-term vertigo, side effects, long-term side effects. Antihistamines sometimes have what are called cholinergic side effects, which is thought to tip the balance towards dementia. And that long-term use of medications have cholinergic effects, such as urinary medications, such as, you know, certain psychiatric medications. You know, sleep medications often have antihistamines in them, over-the-counter sleep medications. That this may, in patients especially who are a little frail and maybe mentally a little bit without too much cognitive reserve, you know, older people who have mild cognitive impairment, these things can tip them over into dementia. They're not good medications to take for the elderly. Is it theoretically possible that a lifetime of antihistamines can push you in that direction? I don't know. Nobody knows.
The rest of my story here, and for Sylvia who has vertigo, my vertigo lasted for a good, well, at least I was motion sick for 3 months after that. It wasn't a full-fledged vertigo anymore. So I was dependent on daily meclizine, which is your Dramamine, Bomine.
Very debilitating drug.
Right. So I finally went to a very prominent allergist here in New York, Dr. Teach.
Morton Teach.
Wonderful. And I said, I want to get off this. How do I do that? You know, and he said, you're going to take B6. You're going to take a lot of B6.
Okay.
And I was cured.
Excellent.
And that was that.
Okay.
Wow. So Sylvia, take some B6. If you're not already taking a B-complex, it may be worth your while. I don't know anything about you, so I'm only going to give you conservative doses, maybe 100 milligrams for a time.
Once or twice daily.
Or something like that. And yeah, stay away from anything causing you congestion, allergenic foods. I don't know if she would be helped by a low histamine diet, but this vertigo could be because of other calcium crystals or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's
exercises,
a multiplicity of causes. And you know, the exercises that were recommended for you were probably a precursor to vestibular rehabilitation, VR. Which helps people acclimate to position change. And the developer and innovator, I believe, is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, my namesake, who's an ear, nose, and throat
here
doctor
in New
here
York.
In New York. Yeah. And a very prominent vertigo and tinnitus specialist.
Wow. So, Sylvia, you know what else is interesting? We've had a lot of cases of vertigo last year, starting from like early summer into winter. I can think right now of 5 different cases of vertigo, whereas for the last 3 years, there were none that I knew of. Coming to us anyway. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, summer and fall allergens.
Go to an ENT and get it checked out.
Okay. Do we have time for is there such a thing as a brief question?
Yes. Oh, Sylvia has a second question.
Uh-oh, okay.
Thank you for all your helpful information. I listened to one of your broadcasts in which you spoke about the benefits of taking vitamin K2, and you suggested that the recommended dose was 100 to 180 micrograms. I have two cardiac stents, and I was wondering whether that dose is too high given the clotting potential of vitamin K.
No, see, the people get that wrong. Vitamin K is, and this, many conventional doctors get this wrong, and we've addressed this before, and I guess we'll address it again, is that vitamin K is a one-way street. Mm-hmm. It will normalize clotting for people who have inadequate vitamin K or who are on Coumadin or warfarin.
Mm-hmm.
It will not overshoot the mark and make your blood clot dramatically or thicken your blood. So that it's inconceivable that taking vitamin K is going to give you a blood clot unless you're on that blood thinner. Now, there are other new blood thinners. What is the new one?
Xarelto.
Xarelto is one of them, yeah, with an X.
But I wonder if she's on, I'm guessing here, Plavix with the two stents.
Plavix is not affected by that. Aspirin is not affected by that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, really 180 micrograms.
And also beneficial because if we say to someone who's already had two stents, stop taking vitamin K, we deprive them of something that's going to be extraordinarily beneficial in terms of preventing atherosclerosis. They've
yes.
already demonstrated a trend toward atherosclerosis. Vitamin K is not just helpful for putting calcium in your bones, it's helpful for keeping calcium out of your arteries.
Yeah.
So it's got cardiovascular protective effects, mm-hmm. and we actually want to use it. Many doctors will freak out when mm-hmm. patients who are on blood thinners are taking vitamin K. The only blood thinner that is interfered with mm-hmm. vitamin K is Coumadin or warfarin. And period. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Sylvia, we hope that answers your question.
Okay. And I hope that answers our questions for today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. But we managed to squeeze in a few questions between digressions, which is good. So hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Remember that these podcasts are offered to you as a free resource. We really enjoy doing them. But we would appreciate your patronage of the Hoffman Center store because thereby you can ensure access to supplements that we personally curate of high quality at reasonable prices and also provide support for our ongoing efforts to provide you with information. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us, everyone.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, our nutritionist here at the Hoffman Center, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.